Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio! I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, silliness, photos, mainly free stuff, which is the real reason why you want to go like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Jack!
Yay!
We are doing a multiple Facebook user question shows, the SHOT Show user question extravaganza, because we're in a van with some dudes.
Down by the river.
We might be down by the river. I don't know where we're at right now. Today's Sunday. Well, today, yes.
Time travel weirds me out. We got to stop this right now.
Okay. Well, it will be Sunday when you all hear this, unless you're watching the live Google Hangout, which means that it's Friday. So this is why time travel, there's paradoxes and stuff. So some places it's Friday, but probably right now if you're listening to this particular recording, it's Sunday, and we're in Las Vegas prepping for SHOT Show. What?
John, I don't know what happens to John Connor now. This is really confusing.
Well, wait, which string are we on?
Because
this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat! Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977! Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. Do you like how I'm just like, psh,
go?
Anyway, we are answering your questions. We are entertaining the Google Hangout people. We're making Joe, the producer, wish that he were somewhere else.
I'm glad I'm here. This is my debut.
Yeah, see, I like that you're actually talking for once.
Cherry's been popped.
Wow, is that okay with the FCC? Can we say that?
I just did.
Well then, you're the man that makes the call. That's awesome. See, the funny thing is that they can't hear you on the video is the only negative here.
Oh well. They'll get over it.
They probably will. It, you know what it is? It's incentive for them to
listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
They need to get involved.
You're not really entertained, Tom. You know what? I'm gonna boot you out of the YouTube feed.
Oh.
Anyway, ask some questions, Jack.
All righty. Coming from Dylan Brundage, what is your opinion on carrying places where you're not supposed to, but it's not a crime?
Well, that seems like that answers that question pretty easy, doesn't it? It depends. So it depends what the consequences are. I am all for obeying the law. If it is illegal and a sign has force of law, then you probably need to not carry there. That would be my official position on that. If it is a place where the signage does not have force of law, I'm really bad at teaching my guns how to read, you know, and they just, those signs are, I don't know, man. Now, something to keep in mind is if your work has a no firearms policy or something like that, but it's not illegal for you to carry there, but you are going to lose your job if you get caught, you really need to weigh the risk versus reward and make your decisions based off of that. You know, I do not know anyone's situation well enough outside of my own to make that call for anybody. As long as you're being a responsible firearms owner, obeying the law, if you're going to store a gun in your car or something like that, it needs to be secured. Otherwise, that's what I got. So,
well, I think that segues smoothly into Mike Ford's question that he's not allowed to carry at work, so he often leaves the firearm in the car, but he's worried about getting it stolen. What are some options for him to keep it safe?
Just get a car safe is probably your best bet. Get it bolted to the floorboard. Or you can, I see a lot of people do like the security steel cable ties that will go through the safe and then loop that around a support strut in the vehicle, usually a chair. The problem with that is if they have any sort of bolt cutters or wire cutters, that safe can walk and they can open it at their leisure. Just keeping it under your seat or in a glove box or something like that is not really a good idea. Glove boxes pop open real easy with just a screwdriver. You pop it in there, pry, and it'll go. You know, so something like that. Another option would be if you cable it to your spare tire in the trunk. And you can do that in such a way so there's not enough slack to get a pair of bolt cutters underneath between it and the tire. That's maybe an option. But even then, that's not a real solid option. And I just happened to glance at the chat while I was answering that question. I see my employee Jack and Joe the producer having an amazing conversation about work. If you're not watching the Google Hangout right now, you're really missing out, I just got to say.
I told you I can multitask.
Yeah, so can I. Anyway, next question.
Alrighty.
Don't say alrighty. Oh my God, you say that every time. Pick a different word.
All right then.
That's the same thing.
Hiram Grissom. What non-networking social media stuff are you most interested in doing at SHOT Show?
Wow, that took me a lot longer to even comprehend as a question than
I thought. I was giving you a softball there, and apparently I had a reset moment on you.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, not work? That's kind of what he just asked me, right?
Well, like, what is the fun thing about SHOT Show that you will enjoy?
Seeing all my friends gathered in one spot is always cool. You know, we've got a really... I think that it's going to be an amazing charity auction party thing that we are doing Thursday night, the Danger Zone party that is going to be in a two-story penthouse on top of one of the casinos on the Strip. So I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of looking forward to that. And the fact that I'm one of the sponsors of the party sort of makes that a little bit better. Because now I get my revenge on all the people that didn't like me in high school. Oh, wow.
That got really dark really fast.
Was that too honest?
Yeah. You got to dial that back. Whoa.
More professional now. I need to really click out of the Google chat there because the conversation is just completely derailing my train of thought.
That's what you get for giving me a microphone.
No. It's
not really a microphone, a keyboard.
Well, I didn't give you the keyboard. I did give you the microphone, though. But I'm cool with you being... See, this is... I like this. It's more interaction from all the people to make the show happen. One of the things that I've been really, you know, wanting to stress to people is it takes a lot more than just what I do to make this happen each week. And I think you deserve to be on the show, Joe.
Thank you very much.
Whether or not you're in the booth, you know, if we do it live on Sunday, you look at every single one of the shows and... mostly fix the sound issues and do your best to put up with me. I mean, you know.
It's a challenge.
I know, right? So, does Brian have you on his show?
Very, very, very rarely. I'm not good enough for that program yet.
Oh, Glory Hound. Anyway. Wow. Next question.
All righty.
God!
Sorry, it's like a built-in response.
I know! Stop it!
From Ben Reynolds, if you could only own one firearm, what would it be? What would be that one general purpose firearm you would own?
Probably a Glock 19 9mm. Only because I can conceal it in almost every situation. It is a pretty decent service pistol. It's a little smaller than I would like for an actual service pistol, but I could hunt with it almost anything in North America if I really had to. Now, am I going out and saying that I'm going to go get me a moose with my 9mm Glock? No, that's not in a realistic situation, no. But if I had to, I could. I wouldn't want to.
It's been done.
Oh, I know, but... I wouldn't want to. It wouldn't be my first choice. But as far as something that actually does everything that I need it to do, you know, that's it. Does it work in NPEs? Yes. Does it work out in the woods if I absolutely need it to? Yes. So that fits all of my criteria. Is it a home defense gun that I can use? Yeah. It does a lot of different things. So as far as if I could only have one, that or something very, very close to it would probably be it. I tell you what, you know what would actually look interesting? Would maybe be like a SIG P320, because the fire control group is a serialized part, so you can make that a subcompact, compact, or full-size gun as your needs dictate. So maybe that. And those have been something that I have not played with a whole bunch, but that is probably something I should consider in that answer. I know everyone wants me to pick like a long gun or whatever, but there's limitations to that you know, you need to be aware of. We got to go to break. Maybe I'll expand upon that when we get back. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Brought to you by Dark Star Gear. Whether you know the color of the boathouse at Hereford or only know the color of your mom's basement and earth-crushing disappointment in you, Dark Star Gear has a solution to your gear-carrying needs. Check out their clip-on holsters for small semi-autos and revolvers or their highly adjustable full-size AIWB holster. They even have a belt-wrap sheath for popular fixed-blade centerline knives to really tie your EDC together. Like that one rug I used to have before the golfer ruined it. Designed, developed, and pressure tested for real life, not Instagram. Though Instagram is cool. Sort of. Find out more at darkstargear.com. You know what I miss? I miss the Aridus Industry ad. Because the desire to know more was always intensifying, and now it's not. I'm sad. That was like a free ad I just gave him, though. Darn making money at this and having rules and regulations and stuff. Anyway, Jack, more questions. Oh, wait, we were talking about, the last question of the segment, since we've got to draw this out just a little bit. Let me expand on that just a little bit more. Now, if we turn that into a what two firearms would I have? Glock 19, and then as much as I love the shotgun, and I do love the shotgun, I would probably do an AR pattern rifle in 308 or 6.8 SPC, maybe 300 blackout. Because then I get a platform that I am very, very familiar with in a cartridge that can actually take game effectively anywhere in the continent. You know, so you're just staring at me like,
well, I don't disagree with you, but I would go in to 6.5 Creed.
I want to be able to find ammo for it afterwards.
It's not that hard to find ammo.
Okay. I want to be able to. So if I'm down the two, then we're talking about some sort of fantasy, you know, the end of the world scenario, which I'll tell you right now.
You don't see yourself in buckskins, like,
nope.
Ruling the wastelands?
No. Knowing just a little bit about countries that collapse, I don't want any part of that. So anyway, yeah, as much fun as it would be to Cormac McCarthy with my two kids.
Nice reference.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. That sounds kind of terrible. But I don't want to do like, you know, I don't think I could Thomas Jane him either, though. You know, hey, look at that.
Wow.
Two references.
You are in the deep reference pool, sir.
Yeah.
People are going to have to Google after this show.
Maybe. So, yeah, maybe how about we just do our best to make sure the world doesn't collapse? That'd be good.
That is always my goal.
That's a good plan.
I like Wi-Fi.
I wouldn't know. I don't have real internet. Can I come visit and like see what real internet looks like?
Yeah.
Have you done a speed test yet?
I did last night.
What were you getting?
I think like 50 up, 40 down, or something like that.
I hate you.
It was.
I fire you and rehire you each show? Can that be a thing?
Yeah.
Like the moment of the show that you're fired? Mm-hmm. You're fired right now.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay, well, you're rehired.
You stopped me before I could say some things.
Yeah, right? Wait, some things? How many things are there?
At least three.
Don't answer. Okay. Read a question. Don't say alrighty.
Every time you tell me not to say it, it's that much harder not to say it.
Well, maybe if I got a big rubber band and just smacked you with it every time you said it, I'd eat a rubber band.
Then watching the live Google Hangout's going to be really worth it.
Oh, my God. The day that you finally overthrow your like, robot oppressor. And wait.
I'm not three law safe.
Okay. Did I just cop to that on live?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I am not a robot. It was a lie. Read the next question.
From John C. McGuire, is there any research to address whether or not there are a larger amount of negligent discharge with or without an external safety on a handgun? My preference is for an external safety, but I know many prefer the Glock-style safe trigger. I wanted to know if there was ever a comparison or data that was out there.
Huh. There might be. If anyone would have done it, it would have been Force Science Institute with Bill Lewinsky, Dr. Bill Lewinsky. I will say this, anecdotally, I see a lot more, I have personally seen a lot more accidents with external safety guns because they give a false sense of security that then allows people to make mistakes or doesn't encourage people to make mistakes, but it certainly seems to make the right kind of people less careful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I also think this is going to be a hard data point to track because most negligent discharges get covered up with, like, wall poxy and then never talked about again.
Well, so let's... I have a buddy of mine that shot himself in the leg with a 1911 in his living room.
Hmm.
And the funny part... So I'll tell you, he's a cop now. He wasn't a cop then. Love you, man. And he listens to the show, too, so... The funny thing about that, though, the 911 call, he's very calm or whatever, you know. Hey, I just shot myself. Where did you shoot yourself? In the living room.
Amazing.
Yes.
I owe that man a beer.
Yes.
Like, I paid.
Well, I don't think he was funny on purpose, but he was funny.
In the living room.
On a Tuesday. I don't know if it was a Tuesday or not, but I hope it was. And then there's the famous Tex Grebner incident. You know Tex, don't you, Jack?
Stop.
Collaborate and listen. Isaac with a brand new invention.
Hold on.
No?
Copyright infringement, man.
No.
Oh, wait, no, you're doing a cover. Oh, there's some, you know.
Well, the other thing, too, that since we have an actual radio show as opposed to, like, you know, just like an online podcast, the station has actually paid money for these songs that we play, and so mm-hmm. that's... I'm not saying, you know, but I am saying. Joe's just like, yeah, sure, right? He's not.
He's making calls right now like, did we pay for this?
Yeah.
Call Vanilla Ice right now. See what his cell point is.
Doing work stuff.
Oh, right. Okay. So, did we have another question?
I don't think you...
I didn't answer the last one, did I? What was the last one? I forgot.
Whether or not there had ever been a study and...
I did answer the last one, kind of. You know, not one that I can cite. I would look at Force Science Institute and see what they've come up with. If you are relying on a manual safety to prevent you from having an accident, you're going to have an accident. The only thing that's going to prevent you from having an accident is you. And that's something a lot of people miss out on. And when they start talking about like striker fired versus single action versus double action, at the end of the day, that's on you. There are certain systems that allow you more room to make mistakes. Single action guns and striker fired guns are not those systems, though. So, and we talked about that a little bit last show, but there you go. Yeah, so anyway. Next question.
okay. Coming from Michael.
Good job.
Holmer.
Thank you.
Caliber selection.
Now, you only get like four of those before you have to pick a different one, right?
Swear. Zero caffeine, and this is what you want to do today.
It's not what I want to do today. It's what I have to do today.
Cause time travel. Caliber selection question. So, based on the premise that all handgun calibers suck, and many people choose 9mm based on the ammo capacity, recoil, and price, my question is, if you lived in a state that restricted you to 10 rounds, would that change your opinion on what caliber you would carry, and also how many extra mags you carried?
How many extra mags I carry? Yes. What caliber I carry? No, not at all. I've selected 9mm because I like how I shoot it, and I like what it does compared to the other handgun rounds. It's, you know, there are very, very few circumstances where I see myself selecting something other than a 9mm for any actual reasons. Now, are there some fake reasons that I might select something other than a 9mm? Like, you know, I'm secretly a closet gun nerd and I have like this weird fetish with 357 SIG or 41 Magnum, then sure. But realistically, I'm pretty cool with 9mm. You know, as far as how many magazines I'd carry, I carry a 10-round 9mm on a semi-regular basis. You know, I've got a Wilson Combat 1911 chambered in 9mm right now that I really like. I carry that pretty often. I carried the last one they sent me pretty often, too, until we auctioned it off. Usually when I do a single stack gun, I'll have three spare magazines. Whatever I'm carrying, I want to have around 30 or 40 rounds available to me. Why that number, I really don't know. It's just my feel-good number. You know, as far as would that change in different states, not so much. You know, so I don't know. That's about where I'm at with that. So that's an answer, right?
I think that answers the question.
We got about 20 or 30 seconds left, so if you can read the question real fast, then I'll say blah, 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 blah.
I can't.
You can't. Wow, at least you're honest. I can't do it. Don't make me. It's fine.
Because just saying alrighty is going to take up the majority of the
time. Oh my god, I'm going to kill you. Why, you little...
We got to get that picture taken now.
Okay. And you're listening to Ballistic Radio! To Ballistic Radio! This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Barrett, 6-Hour, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, more Facebook user questions. And if you're missing the live broadcast of this right now, well...
You're missing out. This is the best one we've ever done.
This is the best. I'm not going to lie. This is definitely the best hangout we've ever done.
If you're at work right now, and you've missed this one, I'm sorry. Come back for others.
Well, there's all sorts of people that are not working right now that are just watching this. So,
Plenty of people are in a conference call.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, is that do most of our listeners have jobs where they can fake a conference call?
I think that in any job you can fake a conference. As a pizza delivery guy, I told my manager I couldn't come in for a day because I was in a conference call with his manager. And he didn't, like, he was like, oh, well, okay then.
Okay then.
If you say conference call, people immediately leave you alone.
Huh. Is that like I had bad Mexican?
Yeah. It explains absences and it's so horrible no one wants to ask any questions about it. Because I hate conference calls, as does everybody. Alrighty. Well, John, William Mock from Texas would like to know what the best aftermarket Glock barrel is.
So here, let me preface this with a couple of things. I have only spent significant time with the Lone Wolf, the KKM, the Wilson Combat, and then the S3F solutions. Of those, I have had the best luck with the S3F. That having been said, a couple things you should know. One, I have a, not a business relationship with them, but they have sent me free product before, so full disclosure. The other thing, too, is that you're not going to notice any difference until you get past 25 yards, and probably not until you get to around 50 yards. So a better question would be, is a aftermarket Glock barrel something that... Oh, and I've spent time with a Silencer Co. barrel as well, but that's not really marketed as a match barrel. That's a suppressor host barrel. The better question is, do you need an aftermarket Glock barrel? And for most, almost everybody, probably not. You are not going to start to see an advantage to that until you get to distances that most people don't shoot at. You know, and that's kind of what I've discovered with it. Now, is there an advantage? Yeah. I have certainly noticed an increase in accuracy with the aftermarket match barrels at longer ranges, on reduced targets especially. You know, that also having been said, I've made a headshot mostly on video. Wow, Jack's like, oh, that was amazing.
Let it go.
Let it go. Yeah, no, never. And the best part is she has to listen to these now, because getting these prepped for the website is part of her job. So, like, I can drop that one, and that she's going to hear it. I made a 100-yard headshot with a Glock 42 380 with gold dot ammo and a stock barrel. So, I mean, you can make shots with factory Glocks. You know, you just start to see a little bit more consistency, especially with garbage ammo. You really notice with bad ammo, you start to see a lot better results. So, yeah. Anyway.
Mike Ford would like to know, do you have a preference on draw stroke? Does it matter if I practice a four-point draw, a competition draw, or press out as long as I can do it reliably?
So... a better way to think about that, in my opinion, is it's not so much whether you can do it reliably in competition or reliably during dry fire. It's what can you do reliably when you're moving, caught off guard, whatever, and what's going to build better habits that you don't shoot yourself on accident under pressure. And I don't think a lot of people think about that quite enough. You know, for instance, there was and I'm not going to get into any names on air, but there's a very well-known on Instagram instructor that posted a video of one of his students shooting from retention using a technique that I find suboptimal. And one of the things that the technique does is encourage people to get on the trigger a lot sooner than they should be, in my opinion, amongst other things. There's other things associated with that. But sure enough, he posts this video, and there it is. Guy's on the trigger before the muzzle of the gun has cleared the holster. So why do I bring that up? There are certain techniques that encourage certain mistakes. When we start talking about draw strokes and things like that, I really don't care what you do. I prefer a press out, though. Mine looks a little weird. Mine is not a traditional 90-degree press out. It's more of a J, where, if you can imagine, I am pressing out, and I'm not coming straight up and straight out. There's sort of a curve. like Peronis. what? You like that, Jack?
That was actually pretty funny.
Thank you. Are you going to play that ad? Please play that ad during the breaks this Sunday.
Sure.
Joe, you need to.
Okay.
It's not been long. It's what? Yeah, I totally derailed the show for a curved member reference. That's okay. Wow.
I'm going to talk to you when we're off air.
Are you magically signing my paychecks now? Because no, I kind of know how that conversation is going to go.
I have questions.
Anyway, back to the drawstroke thing. Wow. This is what happens when we have too much free time. So, you know what it is? I know that I have another show to do right after this, so I don't feel as pressed for time as I usually do, even though they're getting broken up into two single shows. That's the problem. So with a drawstroke, if you can draw straight to the target, which is what a lot of competition shooters do, because it is faster, you know, can you do that while you're moving, caught off guard, drawing your gun in a defensive situation? I don't know. I'm not saying that you can't, but that's something to think about. Is it a robust technique in that situation? The only thing that I really want to see people doing is not getting on the trigger until the muzzle is pointed sort of downrange, which the thing is, when you look at a lot of the high-level guys, they are bad about where their finger is in relation to the trigger because they have to be when we're talking about hundredths of a second are deciding the difference between, you know, first place and third place, something like that. The other thing that I really want to see people do is be aware of where their offhand is. You know, whether you're left-handed or right-hand, your non-dominant hand needs to be somewhere out of the way so that you don't shoot yourself in the hand when you draw. That is something that when people go fast, they mess up a lot. I see that a lot. I've seen a lot in force on force. I've seen guys shoot themselves in force on force with a sim round, which is hilarious. But because they're like, how did that happen? Well, you put your hand in front of the gun and pulled the trigger.
They always look at the paint mark and then they look at the gun. Uh-huh. And they're like, why would you do this to me?
Yeah, why would you do that? I thought we were cool. I thought you were my bro.
But they get locked in there.
Yep. So anyway, yeah. And I don't care what you do. I mean, I prefer a press out. I carry appendix. So I draw straight to two, then, you know, do my thing. I think practicing drawing straight to two is good just because if you are in a compressed situation where you're lacking space or someone is getting close, you're not having to think about doing a draw stroke separate than what you do usually. You're just not continuing all of it. Whereas if you're used to drawing straight to the target and all of a sudden you got to figure out to draw to two, well, yeah. So anyway.
Well, I mean, I took a class from Gomez that was mostly about the draw stroke and everything when he taught it.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that guys who do a lot of appendix, we tend to forget about two. And we go straight to that press out because it is faster. That's that speed we're gaining. But, like, he hammered in about doing that four-point draw stroke. He was big about that.
Yeah. And, well, from appendix. Well, anyway, counting, you know, the count on the draw stroke, I don't like thinking of it that way. I understand why we teach it that way, and I understand why at a beginning level we teach it that way. But at a certain point, it needs to go from whatever count draw stroke to access the firearm, and that's what it is. And, you know, we stop based off of the context of the situation we find ourselves, and if we stop up here at two because that's how close they are, then cool. If we stop out here at like a weird center axis relock thing, then that's what we do. You know, if they're getting closer. I think the other thing you need to consider too is a lot of people like accessing firearms before it is intelligent to do so based off of the proximity of the threat. You know, if someone is within arm's length, I don't know if going to guns is the best idea. But anyway, we have to go to break. So more of your questions when we get back. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Tac Strike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the Archer and Target Sand, which are literally the best steel targets and target sands I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with more than 60,000 rounds of rifle, pistol, and shotgun ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. You know, and even though we are recording the show, I'm just going to go with that. Even though I sort of made like this weird sound when I kind of messed up. Anyway.
It was cute. I liked it.
Do you hear tapping?
I hear a very distinct knocking.
There's
noise.
A raven outside your door.
Oh, man.
Nope.
They're doing construction downstairs.
Oh, they're doing construction downstairs?
Right.
I'm glad that our high-quality soundproof recording booth here.
You pay for the best, my man.
Thank God there's all this foam on the wall.
It's for show.
Oh, my God. So we're answering your questions tonight. Well, not Joe's questions, because he doesn't have any about this stuff. But we're answering the users' questions. I made that sound really negative, like we're some sort of drug that they can't get enough of, which is the end goal, but, you know.
I want a new drug, one that won't make me sick.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. It took me a second. You are the perfect drug.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well, the microphone tears the same familiar hole.
Close. You were close. You messed it up. The microphone tears a hole. The old familiar sting.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. I feel bad now.
Do you remember everything? Anyway, enough of this.
I remember when San Francisco came.
Anyway.
From Bradley Below.
See, that was also a very subtle inside joke that really any... You'd have to be friends with me on my personal Facebook page to know what that reference was. So I like that we're dropping inside jokes, either in the Google Hangout or on the show itself, that 997,000 other people won't get.
These are the best jokes.
Yeah, those are. Wow, I really... We don't get a million listeners an episode. Excuse me.
I was about to say, you've got like...
Wow, we got bigger, yes!
You got Bernie Sanders math going on, bro.
Hey, Star Wars made $1.7 billion, so each American spent $5.3 million to go see it, right?
I would have.
If I had it. Anyway.
From Bradley Below, how will EOTech survive what is going on currently? Are they finished? Do they need to change their model? What do you think?
I think L3 Communications, their parent corporation, has a lot of money, and that EOTech is a small, currently non-profitable portion of their holdings. You know, so at the end of the day, EOTech will be around. They're, you know, look, the people that like EOTech, despite all evidence as to why they probably shouldn't, are going to continue to like EOTech. Their SHOT Show booth should be pretty sporty this year. You know, I don't think it's going to be as sporty as the ATF booth this year, but the ATF booth is always pretty sporty at SHOT Show. Remember the year where the Mullen Labe sticker got stuck to...
Not just stuck, permanently adhered. Like, that's what a lot of people don't know, is, like, the glue on that sticker...
Oh, they did that very specifically.
That had to be, like, power scraped off by the lowest ranking agent there. And apparently now there's a rule that they can never leave the booth unattended.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't either. Not that they're not very popular there or anything, but they're,
I will say that they are always super polite, and they answer the questions, and the guys in the booth are not...
Well, no, it's not... So, I feel... The ATF agents, I feel bad about that, because a lot of the ATF agents I know, like actual agents I know, are pro-gun. They're pro-gun, there are people, whatever. The problem is, they're never the guys that get put in charge.
Yeah.
The appointed positions inside of the ATF currently, They're not our people. But anyway, enough about that. That's dangerously close to politics, and that's not why you guys listen to me. So anyway.
Coming from Jeff Edgar, what are your thoughts on carrying tools for self-defense when maybe the person's abilities are not up to standards? Which I think he means is like if someone is carrying a gun and they're not the best shooter.
So here's the thing about that, and this is probably, you know, this is not a popular fact inside of the industry, but the fact is the vast majority of defensive gun uses are carried out by people that have little to no training at all, successfully. So what training does for us is not necessarily help us to solve the shooting problem. So sometimes it does. Because most, not all, but most of the shooting problems we find ourselves in are relatively straightforward. What it does do for us is, number one, allow us to solve the shooting problems that are not relatively straightforward, which if you find yourself in one of those and don't have the ability to solve it, you're going to have a bad day. They also allow us to recognize when it is and is not a shooting problem. And that cannot be, you know, played up enough in my mind. We have had recently a rash of incidents that have occurred where people have fired a gun in public and really didn't need to. You know, like people have shot at shoplifters or things like that. Training would have helped those people avoid the legal entanglements they have found themselves in now. So I'm not going to tell anybody not to carry a gun if they're not trained. You know, I don't think that our natural human right to self-defense is dependent on a permit or training certificate or anything like that. I think that if you're going to choose to go armed in public, you have a responsibility to yourself, loved ones, and everyone else around you to seek training, the highest level of training that your resources allow for. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on that. Is that, that answers that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next question.
Coming from Mike Ford, if all firearm laws were repealed, would it change anything about the guns you choose for self-defense?
I'd have a lot more short-barreled rifles and shotguns around, you know, just for simplicity's sake. One of the reasons is I've got an SBR AR-15 that I like quite a bit. The only reason I don't travel with it is because I don't feel like filling out the form that is required to take it across state lines. If I didn't have to do that, then that would probably be my travel long gun or whatever you want to call it. You know, short barrel shotgun, that's pretty legit. I like those too. But I mean, that'd be about it. I've got suppressors for almost every caliber I own. So, I mean, I've already got that pretty squared away. So nothing would change there. Would I have a machine gun or something like that? I'm sure I would, but would I choose that for self-defense? In my experience, full auto fire is not really useful in the sort of engagements that we are likely to find ourselves in as a civilian. You know, specifically, you know, suppressing fire is not really a tactic over here. So yeah, that's about where I'm at on that. But hey, it's that time. We need to wrap up. We're going to be doing the same thing next week, though. So if you want to hear part two of the show, listen next week. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.